This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
As extraordinary as all this architecture is, I think that a lot of these things that we do in our everyday life actually apply to extreme circumstances, can save our lives and elongate our lives tremendously. About 7 years ago, I was struck by a car going about 40 miles an hour in a 25 mile per hour zone. One trajectory of the accident goes like this, and this is the one I'll use for the purpose of this talk. Hit by a car, thrown up the hood, crashed into and bounced off the windshield, thrown back down to the street, hit again by the car, which rolled onto my right leg. Unknowingly, but most certainly, I incorporated what Arakawa and Ginz call architectural procedures, landing sites, terminological junctions, biotopology, into my methods of survival, and my thoughts are around using these tactics as therapeutic ways to train and retrain people to save and extend life. My solutions and theirs in spirit and some in actuality were so consistent that it was astonishing and thrilling for me to discover their work after I had this very protracted experience of 3 years of hospitalizations and surgeries and leg coming on, leg going off in various configurations. I felt liberated and validated by my own experience of a dreadful trauma. As I was engaged in an ongoing, mighty creative battle to save my life, they were creating mechanisms of meaning, the architecture, poetry, art, and philosophy of the architectural body. I am also want to digress a little bit just to compliment the language. I'm so moved and inspired by Madeline's beautiful and exquisite language, and one of my current favorite mantras is, fielding the surroundings, one lets loose ubiquitous landing sites which permeate and supplant each other in rapid successions. Landing sites allow the ties that bind us to preconditioned ways of responding to all of that which comes at and surrounds us, loosen along a newly devised and designed trajectory that opens rather than shuts down at every moment, from the grand moments in which we actually decide to live or die, to the extraordinarily ordinary, but not so ordinary, moments we tie our shoes or comb our hair across the street. Because those same decision sets serve us continuously, and I really want to stress this, those same decision sets that can save our lives are also in force as we tie our shoes or comb our hair across the street. And underestimating their power and vivacity and not exploring them in this way can literally cost you your life. I'd like to talk just a little bit about landing sites the way I'm using the term in this talk. I feel strongly at this point, since we're experimenting and forging so many new procedures right now, to keep the term landing site very open. A simple taking note of, a bit of substance, a segment of atmosphere, an audible anything, a whiff of something, cues from the environment to assign volumes and a host of particulars to world and body. An attempt to classify every possible bit of almost nothing could cloud their original, liberating, generative power by over-delineating, and to what end, the broad and open fields within fields of possibilities they simultaneously mark and hold open as we navigate and negotiate body and world every minute of every day. We risk becoming more interested in the mental constructs than the physical terrain, seduced by our own cerebral sagacity, which threatens to override full body knowledge that was the original goal and promise of this tremendous reversible destiny project. When these concepts are judiciously classified, there must be a system that advances some significant goal, such as, say, for the topic of this talk, using landing sites therapeutically. How will certain series of classifications aid an independent lander or landing site therapist to work most efficiently with her client/lander? How can the classifications be constructive and not confusing? And most importantly, since split-second reactions to with landing sites are crucial, one must make sure the language itself does not impede or slow the process of superliminal, fleet responses to challenging physical situations. The I believe the essential, even revolutionary discoveries lie ahead in our newly forming awarenesses about how much ability we have to cooperate and collaborate with all aspects of landing sites, helping us reveal our true biological potential in all of its potency and vivacity. So now I'll go back to the trajectory of my accident again. Hit by a car, thrown up the hood, crashed into and bounced off the windshield, thrown back down to the street, hit again by the car, which rolled onto my right leg. After I was hit by the car, I was unconscious and moved in and out of degrees of consciousness and unconsciousness for extended periods of time. I sustained numerous fractures from skull to ankle, but had no organ or spinal cord damage, spent 3 years in hospitals and nursing homes, undergoing intensive series of surgeries and therapies, and an unimaginable physical pain. I was told I might never walk again, and in fact, I had to relearn how to walk several times, once with a very deformed body, leg going one direction, waist going in another, neck going in another, in order to try to orient myself in space. Finally, I did find a doctor who did and was able to straighten me out after traveling the country looking for somebody who could do this. It's a long story that's not necessary to repeat here. But I did find a remarkable surgeon in Baltimore who, after enough bone was knit in about another year, removed all the hardware, rebroke all the bones, renailed the leg, which is how I stand here today. From the moment I was hit, I was challenged to discover not only resources within myself that I didn't know I had, but was called to create, improvise, forge, if you will, new ways to save my life and survive. To move very quickly past the primal shock of the sudden and act and react, even as a tremendous sense of inertia not only prevails, but attempts to supplant and even seduce one to die. I'm not sure when I did exactly what I did, meaning in what order, but shocked back to my body, I began to make decisions and do things during long protracted stages of that split second hit that ultimately left me in the street writhing in pain. I do not know how I knew what to do what I did, but without any form of guidance, any model, or any knowing how to proceed, in a state of utter desperation and distress, I started to do things to save myself. Some of those activities I'll touch on in this talk, and they all could be learned and dealt with in landing site therapy and with engaging in all these different constructions that we just saw here. I repeatedly decided not to die. I defied gravity. I manipulated space and time. I formed my body into certain shapes to protect it from certain blows and perhaps to actually communicate with my body to the blows themselves. I was crossing the street after having seen a play of a friend, which happened to have been exploring the theme of transmigration of souls. We had dinner, engaged in fascinating personal conversations, but clearly as we parted and I began to walk home, ruminating about the night and trying to cross the street at the same time was more than I could handle. One minute I was animated by the topic of past lives, and seemingly the next I was literally dying. At that moment I was so unalive to how I was dispersed, and as Madeline and Arakawa asked, where am I? This question has embedded within it an even more direct query, what am I? It may be that the two questions need to be formulated as one. Where, what am I? Or what, where am I? To those questions, I added almost too late, am I? Reveling with pleasure in what am I almost completely forgot to ask, where am I? I believe that the whole accident could have been avoided if I was proceeding in a mindful way and asking, where am I? But clearly I was not. I called upon everything I knew from art and poetry, from my meditation practices and spiritual study, some of which have included TM, Siddha Yoga, a Hindu meditation, Kundalini and chakra work, Tibetan Buddhist meditation, and Kabbalah, Torah, and study meditation and yoga. Unconscious and moving in and out of degrees of consciousness, in a bath of my own warm blood, freezing and burning up at the same time, explosion after explosion, in or outside my head or both. I manipulated space and time and slowed time down. I'd like to point out the possibilities offered by time and the implication and importance of working with, grabbing onto temporal landing sites. Slowing the event down actually allowed me to respond quicker and better. I chose to slow time down to experience the accident in multiple simultaneous versions of time, fields of forces producing not only patterns but forms inflected by oscillations, fluctuations, hesitations, the collision of past, present, and future gradually slackening. A deeper formal space of time became manifest, both truncating and attenuating, cars speeding up, crash slowing down to move to more and more frames per second, effectively drawing itself back even as the car propelled forward to hit me, kind of David Cronenberg meets Edward Muybridge on Benefit Street. Complex ground configurations along the vertical axis in sweeping diagonal perspective explode a surface incident, twisting interfacing materials with mangled metal at column capitals. Finished steel fiber and reinforced polymer rods blasted away to barren, collapsed into hoistways with little or no resistance. I also experienced a doubling and tripling of myself. As Oppen has said, I became numerous. What I call the host body remained intact, yet divided into many versions of myself, hovering nearer and farther away, but who also experienced the hit and also existed in numerous simultaneous incarnations and reincarnation of myself, herself, the split second drawing itself out seemingly endlessly, so that I, we, they could describe the hit both like so. I could storyboard it frame by frame by frame as a seemingly endless event, or I could describe it in various distinct stages as I have done for the sake of this talk. I also realized that what we are calling landing sites can be predispersed in order to prevent or pre-event events from even happening. Slowing time down and doubling allowed me to, in some sense, see and engage the calamity better than if I had remained an idle, passive observer of my fate. Strange synesthesias, visualization of brain or mind coming apart and trying to rebuild itself as peculiar animated maps or architectural plans, weather forecasts, etc., but not those really either. We can manifest time even as we mark it. We can coexist more as a partner of time than a victim of it in versions we allow to simultaneously exist as, for example, frozen and passing. By slowing time down or choosing to function in the slowed down version, one can watch representation of oneself, watching themselves, and so on. My own figures show plastic patterns of movement under the influence of vibration, even as I experienced the blows. Since I was a pedestrian, there was no armor, nothing to absorb the shock or to store the history of formation in their shape, so they are stored in my shape, new forms created even as my body was storing them. I like a quote from Bergson, matter cannot be separated from the historical process of its becoming, and I would add neither can humans. So we are challenged in these extreme circumstances to observe the developmental unfolding of processes even as we experience them. In essence, one can learn to do on the spot retracing and reframing of events even as they unfold, at least at this point, to soften the blows, if not to completely reconfigure and change the outcome. I think we can learn, as I did through the course of my accident and healing, to experiment with exercises and slowing time down, suspending, compressing, enveloping the present, collapsing it into its before potential, holding it there, unmanifest present, which contains its potential future, the all-at-once of it, held in place with the past of it, does reframe existing structures. We can devise exercises in manipulating time, slowing and speeding heartbeat, protracting seconds, focusing concentration to explore and analyze these situations. Ultimately, I believe, before entering the future, we can intercept the pre-event and reverse the outcome of the potential accidents or destabilizing activities. Alternate sketches of the world are made as the solid body loses, also loosens not only its coherence but its frame, creating an even more tenuous connection to the outside world. These experiences also have their own visual dramaturgy that one may observe as self from the outside, even as one's body is being crushed, a partial dissolution of outward-inward experiences of looking. World recedes or lurches forward, controlled in a sense by the perceiver lander, a kind of representational space, a mimetic relationship, the transfer of self with its own time structure within or alongside other structures of time. I believe eventually we will be able to entirely recast the present, even as it unfolds. As Madeline Arakawa say, a person will feel herself first surrounded according to one description of the world, then another. And these descriptions of the world can continuously advance and change. Repeatedly decided not to die. I discovered the lines between life and death are much more blurry than I ever knew. Oddly, like memory, dying like remembering is an activity, a verb, something people do. Each person's death is unique, and I certainly cannot compare my deaths from a trauma, but to deaths from chronic or to deaths from chronic or acute diseases or even different kind of traumas. But I do feel that out of the responses I made, many new procedures applicable to critical situations, even the onset of death, can be gleaned and applied. How many people have not realized they had an option to not die, or who did not in that moment have the resources or presence of mind to resist long enough to be rescued and therefore died when they could have actually saved themselves? One must come at certain points in one's life to decision, to decide, to give in to the temptation of death pull or not. And that decision calls for actions. It calls for an active resistance as death pull attempts to continuously seduce one to a painless, tranquil, even sensual state of not being here, not here being. Accounts by trauma survivors are strikingly similar. This one from the survivor of the London tube attack, who says, "It was a dialogue in my head of the body just saying, rest, go to sleep, close your eyes. Someone will come and find you. It will be nice and calm. Just close your eyes." And the other half saying, "If you close your eyes, you won't ever open them. So don't listen to that. Keep your eyes open and watch for a torch." I made the decision to stop this dialogue, go to sleep, stay awake. I made a very conscious decision. I just said to myself, this is not where I die. I personally came to realize that everything I knew about death, its advance and process, its very definition, plus the call used in hospitals, need to be reconceived based on radical new paradigms that empower life and create survival. When does life begin to end, and when does death begin to take hold? How long can one be dying before one is actually called dead, even after one dies and revives, as I did? A quick Google search of the definition of death yields some interesting results. Death, one, the end of life, the cessation of life, in parentheses. These common definitions of death ultimately depend upon the definition of life, which is what we're working on right here, upon which there was no consensus. The permanent cessation of all vital bodily function, in parentheses, this definition depends upon the definition of vital bodily functions. So that all of these things that we're discussing here, really, when we're talking about prolonging life and not dying, we really also need to begin to think about how we actually define the process of dying before we even get to this thing called death. And I believe that there's a lot to be talked about in this category that we're just beginning to touch on here. Professor Alan Kelleher argues that, quote, the current emphasis on brain death has come from a select cabal of doctors, and that is in least part and driven by the need to harvest organs for transplant. Some philosophers and scientists have argued that the whole brain standard does not go far enough. And this is really not my topic of study, except from my experience. From my experience, I know that I felt myself to be dying, but I also felt myself, I also felt that the process of dying had very much to do with manifesting self, as Arakawa and Madeline Ginz talk about. In my case, although I did not completely die at certain points, I continued to have great difficulty manifesting myself. My here-ness was ephemeral, transitory, My boundaries disappeared or became almost totally permeable. Boundaries permeable, not in the Baroque sense, discontinuous walls of continuous reconciliation, because there was almost nothing left of my here to be discontinuous reconciled. Since I was unable to manifest myself, I was also unable to contain myself, unable to manifest the separation between myself and the materiality of the space around me. Excuse me. Therefore, my connection to the world was loose, a frightening state of being connected by a blobular, almost gelatinous substance that was nothing like I had ever experienced or would ever care to again. Losing my ability not only to occupy but to manifest space, I was also losing my ability to form world, myself in the world and the world itself. All world or atmosphere rushed in to take me over. Boundaries between myself and world were almost completely penetrable, and I had to resist being absorbed. I wonder how much of dying actually has to do with this definition of resisting being absorbed by atmosphere, and if we redefine what we mean by atmosphere, what we mean by life, and what we mean by death, how we have to start to begin to completely redefine all these categories based on things that we are going to be continuously in the process of discovering as we put our bodies into these incredible architectural surrounds that we've been shown today. I did a number of many things. I'm going to just go into a few now that our Collingans talked about in terms of landing sites. One thing I did to prevent myself from the seduction of death, I used a few techniques. One was naming, to name anything around me. First, any body part, especially those in pain, lower leg, ankle, knee. Naming, not necessarily saying or even thinking words, but remembering or acknowledging and connecting to specific body parts, I would say to landing sites. Any landing site I could grab onto through thinking its name in my mind, even as I was kind of shocked out of being able to scream or yell or have any kind of response other than this. I believe that I was actually practicing landing by naming, and I believe that there are also numerous other ways to force oneself to continue to land in the throes of dying, even in other dire circumstances. The landing sites became like gestural drawings on air with words. I forced myself, tibia, knee, and other, I'll just move on here. Managing to continue to manifest myself world, I maintained the vivacity of my field, and I remained alive. There's many other things I did. In the interest of time, I won't go into now. But I just want to say in conclusion again that I'll go back to those few points. We can all repeatedly decide not to die. We can decide to define gravity, to manipulate space and time, and to form our body into shapes to protect it from blows, and perhaps to communicate with body and architectural surrounding ways that we've yet to discover by actually putting ourselves in landing sites. Thank you.